Oh, that's my new favorite toy this week.
Welcome to Still Untitled, the Adam Savage Project. I'm Will.
I'm Adam.
And I'm Norm.
Well, gentlemen.
Yes, sir.
That is a nice laser sword.
Isn't it lovely? I'm really pleased with it. I particularly like the fact that it gets thin here.
They totally Luke Return of the Jedi lightsabered it.
Yeah, but there's also some Obi-Wan quotes. That's like the thing at the bottom of Obi's saber.
Bottom stud.
Yeah, and it's super weathered. It's lovely work. Those guys do very excellent work. And I will say it's not cheap. Oh, also, wait a second. Here we go. Watch this. It changes color, RGB, and it scrolls through a whole bunch of colors.
Can you program the colors you want, or is it just a cycle?
I don't know. There's a whole website. There's a little video on their website about how other features. Apparently, you can also change the sound profile. Okay. And I haven't explored that yet because I've just been out here in the shop just like smacking them in.
Audio listeners will
for
love
people
this
listening,
segment.
Just listening to the podcast. Well, Adam is playing with his newest toy. It's a lightsaber from Vader Sabers. And when he showed it to me earlier this week, I was so impressed because we've seen a lot of lightsabers you can buy at conventions. Yeah. I remember back in 2005, Master Replicas had the first FX lightsaber, which had the lights.
I've got a
had
couple
the sound,
over there.
But it wasn't the form of a lightsaber. One, they would shatter.
So you couldn't beat each other with them.
You weren't supposed to actually play with them.
Two, my children destroyed my television with one.
Oh, I remember. Yeah, to tell that story. Yep. And also, the actual lightsaber itself was massive. Except that you had to put the C fatter. Or D batteries. It was much fatter. And technology in 10 years has improved to, I mean, we have...
Thanks, lithium polymer.
Yes, it's exactly. It's using those big fatty batteries.
Yeah.
There's those RGB lights. There's motion sensing. It's actually sturdy enough with this polycarb that you can whack it against heads or
other swords.
Or other swords, laser swords.
Excellent, excellent piece of engineering.
If you have a car's worth of laser swords, you can go out in the park at night and have a really cool fight with them.
Oh, that would be so cool.
Is that one of those things you should always keep? I mean, in the back of your car? Just in case you need a light?
I think that you guys should each go get one.
I'm going to get right on that.
you can deduct it.
That's true. I could deduct it. Yeah. There's a whole new world of things that can be deducted.
Yeah, man.
I'll get that in a pair of black pajamas and call it a Luke Skywalker costume.
I wonder how it would look under a high-speed camera at night in the park.
Flickery.
You know, I was thinking about doing long exposures because it's so pretty, especially with changing color.
All you need is like a 1/15th of a second, and you can get
I was thinking do like a minute and a half and run through a park swinging it and changing color.
Or you could just do a high
naked.
Speed.
Naked. I'd be naked.
Shutter.
Did I mention that?
And at that long exposure, you couldn't see anything.
Really enjoying this retirement.
But then you've seen everything.
letting everything hang loose.
Unemployment 2016.
Wow.
Happy trails.
No pants, guys.
Hey, Will.
Speaking of trails. What?
No.
I finally have seen The Hateful Eight.
It was a long trail.
I know. It's been a long road. I've seen two things lately that are worth talking about. We're not going to talk about Anomalisa today because I don't think either of you have seen it yet.
No, I got to see it. I got to see it.
It is really, really incredible.
Okay.
Definitely worth watching. But I saw The Draft House.
Yeah.
Which was my first trip to The Draft House. Holy cow, that is an amazing way to see a film.
Yes!
Alamo Draft House, which is the new mission, opened in San Francisco last December, based in Austin, Texas. They have a whole chain of them.
Yeah.
And they're notable for several reasons.
Well, you sit down, there's a recliner. So the theater I was in was relatively small. There were maybe three rows with 12 seats per row. So it was pretty small. And there's a table every other chair, basically. You sit down and you can order stuff. Do I sound weird?
No,
to you, guys?
You sound totally fine.
Just my headphones on.
You look funny with those white headphones.
I know they're my VR headphones. So you sit down in the recliner, and then when you want food or something, you write it down on a piece of paper and you put it in a little thing and they hold it up and people bring you beverages and food during the film.
Yeah.
But the best part is that the beginning of every film, they say, here are the things that are going to get you removed from the theater without getting your ticket refunded. Having your phone out.
Right.
Talking to people. That's pretty much it. It's those two things. Yeah.
And they make custom trailers for these PSAs. If you search on YouTube, they actually have one of these PSAs released online where they have actual audio recordings of the people who've complained who've called into their line. Like, you know, I was just making a phone call. I need to do this text. Well,
what?
No rule, no exceptions. Right.
There's no excuses.
The response when you're caught is to be like, my bad, not double down and be like, I'm in a modified version of my living room and everyone just needs to deal.
It was a really important call.
Now, the food service.
Do you know who I am?
Oh, no. Oh, boy. The food service at these type of theaters is a great part of the experience, and the wait staff is trained to, they come in at a specific time of the movie, so it's not to distract you. You know, they kind of ninja around.
They do it very well.
I don't know how, like, that's a brutal job because they're always bent over and kind of, it's like the
and working in the dark.
Balls at the tennis court.
Right? Yeah. And they have to take credit cards and get all the bills, everything checked out. Like, I would imagine as technology gets better and there's like, you know, Apple Pay or Google Pay, Google Wallet, you could just pay with your phone and not have that.
Oh, nice.
That, yeah, and just bump to pay at every seat. But you get food service. Now, I watched Star Wars there and it wasn't my first time watching
Star
Wars.
Are there bigger theaters there?
There are. There's a really big one downstairs with a massive, you've seen it, Adam.
Several hundred seats.
Okay. I don't
know.
There's
a 90 seater upstairs and a bunch of 30 seaters.
I must've been one of the 30 seaters.
Oh, okay.
I don't know if I want to watch that for a movie I'm really, really invested in and want to pay full attention to.
So I found in the small theater, and we had kind of the bad seats in the small theater. So we're in the first row up near the front for Anomalisa.
Right.
And it's a super, super short film. It's like 78 minutes or something. I didn't mind at all. Like, I was so invested in the thing, and the projection was really nice, and they did a good job with it.
Oh, gotta go see that movie. I'm leaving town tonight, which is killing me because I want to go see it away.
It's 3 o'clock now. You can probably make it over there and back. I am all in for things that don't require IMAX like spectacle.
Yeah.
Right. That's my new go-to.
And for just personally for me, they're like 5 blocks from my house.
Yeah, and the tickets were cheap too.
Yeah.
It was like $10.
It's a great place.
Food's expensive.
That's fine.
It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And they love film.
Yeah. Well, and so they also do old shows too. So after we went there, we grabbed the calendar and they have a Saturday morning show of Miyazaki films sometimes. So they're doing like Spirited Away and Totoro and stuff like that, that you can bring your kids to.
Yeah.
So why would I not bring my kid to see Totoro?
Those movies are perfect for second run and special events. Zombie night or
I think we should host
night.
A tested event there.
I would love to. I think that would be rad.
We'll figure that out. Yeah.
Can I come?
I would absolutely.
Yes.
Okay. I think that's a great idea then.
So what did you think of Hateful Eight, the other movie you saw?
Well, Anomalisa is great. You should watch it. Hateful Eight
is this a spoiler cast?
For Hateful Eight? Yes, I think it
I
should
think we
be.
Should spoiler. We spoiler cast
all
Tarantino.
Right, there
movies,
it goes.
Right?
Yes.
This is, here's
it's
spoiler.
A thing we have done in the past.
It's bloody and people are venal. Okay. Moving on.
That's pretty much it. I found as Tarantino films have been recently, I found it really, really uncomfortable and much, much more compelling even than Django was.
Oh, more compelling.
I walked out of the theater from seeing this and just wanted to talk to people about it. And I would have turned around and gone back and watched it again.
What was your takeaway about what was so compelling?
I didn't see the roadshow version
because
it was gone by the time I got around to leaving the house. And the thing that struck me, well, A, there's amazing character performances, right?
So yeah, everyone in it's wonderful.
Everyone has really clearly defined, at least to them in the beginning, goals. And there's, are we spoiling already? Or are we going to have a no spoiler section first?
No, I think that at this point we could start, you know, within a couple minutes here.
And we talked about the Alamo first. So there's there's 10 minutes of podcast for people who haven't seen the movie yet. I thought that the turn, you know, at the moment in the roadhouse, in the haberdashery, where you realize, oh, none of the people that were in the haberdashery at the beginning are what they seemed.
Right.
What was that? You mean, is that the flashback?
After the flashback, when you realize
so just post the intermission is when that happens.
Right.
The roadshow.
So, okay. So that's
good context for
one of the things I wanted to know. I went and looked on the internet and there's no good list of what changes.
The intermission happens right after Marquest,
Sam Jackson
shoots the son of Bruce Dern.
Yes.
Oh.
So, you know, he has
that flashback.
A big buildup and confrontation.
Yes, that is a flashback. You're right.
About, and it's a very gratuitous sequence where Sam Jackson provokes the old Confederate general.
Yeah.
And to a point where he pulls a gun and Sam Jackson shoots him. And that's a great build-up moment because he's obviously instigating, but then there's a great storytelling there. And then everyone's engrossed. There's an intermission. And when you come back from the intermission, that's when you get the narrator's voice that tells you something has changed or there's a thing amiss with the poison.
That's the poison. So you already know that no one in the room is who they
say
they are.
No one in the room.
Yeah. Oh, that's after the poison.
Yeah. Because after the poison, that's when...
Everything goes haywire. That's right.
Walton Goggins.
But I want to just say this. The Sam Jackson's provocation of the Confederate General Bruce Dern, I was shocked. Oh. I actually found it very upsetting.
I would have liked to have had 10 minutes to go out and have a beer and like...
It was on the order of the GIMP. Like,
oh, I think it was much worse than the GIMP.
I'm not so sure it was much worse. Here's the thing is when I was watching Pulp Fiction for the first time in 94 and Marcellus Wallace and Butch wake up in the basement of the with the ball gags in their mouth. And I'm thinking, oh my God, how bad could this get? Fair. And it gets worse than I could possibly imagine.
That's true.
That's the same kind of place I was feeling about the provocation.
It was unclear to me. Like, I assumed that story was untrue.
Yes.
Right.
Yeah.
I was under the assumption.
I mean, that's part of the storytelling. Like,
right.
I think it was totally true.
You think so?
I totally do.
I assume that it's like the Lincoln letter and that it was a story that he told to get the desired result.
He knew too much about...
Sam Jackson's good at telling stories.
Yeah, about the son, though, that the father recognized.
Oh, no, I'm sure that the meeting the son was true. I'm sure that the details of the son's...
Oh, I see. I see.
And the sexual violence therein, probably less so.
Yeah. Mm. Okay, so... So you were talking about the thing you found most compelling.
The thing that was most compelling was Jennifer Jason Leigh's performance, which was also really hard to watch.
Incredible and super. She's like wicked.
Unbelievably good.
Unmitigatingly wicked person.
I saw and it started in the beginning. She's painted as a relatively for a few moments. As a kind of sympathetic character,
right?
Because you're like, oh, she's this woman. She's been captured. She probably killed her husband or something. I don't know. What's the typical trope here?
Yeah.
And then Kurt Russell just backhands the shit out of her, and about half the audience laughed, and the other half the audience gasped, and it was like almost cartoonish violence that then had a really very real and visceral depiction. It wasn't your Jackie Brown cartoon violence.
No.
The movie was very blunt. The dialogue and also, I mean, it felt cold also.
It did feel cold.
Super, super cold.
Oh, like actually cold.
Cold.
Not cold emotionally cold.
No. Both. At times both. I liked the cabin atmosphere to it. What I really wanted to, after watching it was, because the story of how this movie got made is also interesting, right? Because the script was leaked.
Right.
And he said he would never do the movie because the script was leaked. And then
this is a big brouhaha a couple of years back.
And then so what got the movie made or what compelled Tarantino to make the movie was then a live reading of the script in there was a theater event where he and some of his regulars got together and they did a reading of it line by line. He narrated and did all the and the reaction to that was so good. Then he felt like then he should make this movie. And one of the reasons he got the movie made and they allowed him to make the movie or he allowed the movie to be made was that he got to also play with the Panavision 70mm, which there's been a lot of discussion about his use of it. But I mean, I think just bringing the format back and allowing to film and edit in that format, I think is a great moment for modern film.
I would love to see the first, two parts that happen on the trail. In that
Panavision. Yeah, it's absolutely beautiful. It's totally gorgeous.
But the thing I've walked away from it, and I liked it.
Excuse me.
I don't think it's high up there in his pantheon of movies. I really want to see later on this become a theater, a play. Because it is the one room.
It's a one-act play, kind of.
Interesting.
Yeah.
It is the one room.
And there are moments...
Do like, without the whole traveling to the... Yeah.
Yeah. And just have it come in.
He arrives.
There's a whole, it almost seems like he wrote it for that. You have the people leaving the room, coming back in the room, people doing things on their own when you have other people interacting.
Oh, interesting. Sorry, now that you say that, it reminds me that he might have taken as his screenwriting axiom to go back to Reservoir Dogs, put most of this movie in a room and see what happens among the people. It's also, the ensemble acting is phenomenal. Everyone in the movie is incredible.
Yeah. But it's mostly like one-on-one interactions, as is a lot of his movies are. Mm-hmm. You know, you have an intense conversation between two actors, and then it pivots, and then two other actors get to have an intense conversation. And people are doing things on their own. The guy in the corner playing with his cards, the person playing the piano. All this ambiance adds up, which I think works for a play. Because then, and then you have mystery. You know, if you didn't watch closely, who put the poison in?
Well, you couldn't see in the 30 mil.
You could
35 mil. Oh, and you saw a hand, but you didn't see who.
And you don't see in the 70 mil either. But I'm saying, as a play, you could. You
might be able to
block it.
That.
Yeah, you can have that as part of the story.
There's something I really loved. So, a key bit in the film is that Sam Jackson has the Lincoln letter, supposedly a letter written to him from Abraham Lincoln, mm-hmm. and it features fairly heavily between him and Kurt Russell's character. And at a certain point, Walter Scoggins, who, by the way, gets a standout as like an amazing performance in this.
He played the Confederate major, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Walter Scoggins, you'd know him as the villain from Justified, but he's been around forever. I've been a fan of his since The Apostle. He's in The Bourne Identity. Mm-hmm. He's terrific. Anyway, he reveals that there's no way the letter could be real. And the moment he does, Samuel Jackson fesses up. No, the letter is not real. And Kurt Russell, who has been enjoying knowing about this letter for months because he had met Sam Jackson 8 months before, is angry. And Sam Jackson says, "Well, I'm sorry I hurt your feelings. I'm sorry if I hurt your feelings." And Kurt Russell says, "Well, you did." And I love any bloody Western that gets to a point where a grizzled old bounty hunting hangman cowboy goes, "You hurt my feelings."
It was Kurt Russell was like, this is one of the great, not that Kurt Russell needed dredging up in the same way that John Travolta did before Pulp Fiction, but we haven't seen Kurt Russell like this in a really, really long time.
Also, let's be clear. This movie, the entire movie, including its setting, is an homage to The Thing.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't think of that.
Oh, no. It's totally obvious. Wow. And he says that, actually. It's Kurt Russell, you in snow, somebody's not what they say they are. They've got to ferret it out.
Oh, that's great.
did you guys know?
I love watching this happen in your head. It's like cascading down.
When did you guys figure out? I mean, he foreshadowed the Bob New Mexican situation really, really early and really obviously.
Right.
But the rest of it, reading later, almost all of the other characters that had the turn, it was foreshadowed pretty heavily. One character or another knew something was up with all of them.
Right.
And it was there. It's to be honest, it's the kind of movie that I said I would have turned around and gone back and rewatched again just because I wanted to unpack the performances after having, you know, the first viewing is for plot. The second one is for the individual performances.
It's a Rorschach test.
Well, I'd like to see it again too. I'm very much interested in seeing it again because in the end, the film has a central thesis about racism and living as a black man in America. In fact, Sam Jackson says that in the film.
Or a woman or Hispanic. Woman.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
That made me want to go experience it again, looking at it from the front of the film through that lens.
Well, there's a hierarchy. I mean, the hierarchy is clear, right? Because, you know, Sam Jackson says, look, Hattie doesn't allow Mexicans in her establishment.
Right.
And you go down there and then you realize that Jennifer Jason Leigh is somewhere below any of the men.
Right.
Until you realize maybe not so much.
Yeah.
Like it's an interesting.
Yeah. As much as they get along, Kurt Russell and Sam Jackson do, their relationship, it's also clear the context of that, you know, post-Civil War. And
they have the closest to a friendly relationship mm-hmm. for anybody in the movie.
And then let's talk about the tragedy that happened on set, the destruction of the. So there's a scene in the film where Kurt Russell destroys a guitar, and they had a bunch of copy guitars because they'd been lent this priceless Martin.
It's a 1880s pre-Civil War Martin or something like that. And Jennifer Jason Leigh is playing it. And it's a gorgeous scene.
It's a beautiful scene. It's a beautiful guitar. Kurt Russell yanks it out of her hands and shatters it. And she screams. And as what I've heard is her scream was genuine because she knew that was a real guitar and Kurt did not.
So the way the scene was blocked was there was originally supposed to be a pause and a cut from the time that she plays to the time that he grabs it. And Kurt Russell just kept going.
What is going through her head as an actor knowing that it's on camera.
Right.
She doesn't know his intent. Like if he's so method that he would break the priceless guitar.
I don't know.
If she knows the cameras are rolling.
Well, it was a mistake. This wasn't I'm so method. I believe this was a genuine from what I've read.
But I'm saying, but from her perspective in that moment.
Right.
She has she has the option to give the delivery. She could have broken character.
And I haven't watched it again, so I don't know whether she just screams and they cut to the next shot.
So as I recall, I didn't know this beforehand, but as I recall, he smashes it against the pole to directly to her right, yells at her to stop playing it, and then the cut.
Right.
And she's just aghast.
And so that could be that she's not making an actor choice. She's literally, oh my God, they just broke the absolutely priceless guitar.
Martin is no longer loaning guitars from their museum to films.
Who in the set knew? At that moment.
So there was a DP, I think, said, look, the situation was that everybody on set knew except for Kurt, and they just didn't cut.
In
they
time.
Missed the cut, or he missed the cut, or whatever.
Oh, it's heartbreaking.
And it was
it's heartbreaking because I feel completely sure no one intended to do this. There was no anything but just a couple of crossed wires that led to the worst possible case scenario. And it's so sad. It's sad for the Martin people losing this incredible artifact. It's very intense.
Let's be clear. It's not as sad as like loaded guns on set.
Absolutely.
But
don't go to the fallacy of false equivalency.
Yeah. Wow.
Got a reference
from the future or the past. I don't know which. The thing that I loved, one of the things that I loved watching this the first time was the number and use of hand props and costumes and you know, each of the characters had a thing or multiple things that were their bits.
And I got to talk to Sam Levine a few years ago. Kevin Pollak came up to San Francisco and interviewed me on his wonderful podcast. Mm-hmm. And Sam Levine is his right hand in that podcast. Sam Levine was in Freaks and Geeks. Mm-hmm. It's a wonderful actor. And he's also in, Inglourious Basterds.
He's one of Brad Pitt's guys.
He's one of Brad Pitt's men. Yeah. Aldo Raine's men. And he told me that the prop master on Tarantino's films is having so much fun. All of their pockets were full of period stuff. Stuff you never see on camera. Matchbooks and business cards and lighters. And I mean, it's just like they had a field day.
Well, but because this takes place mostly in this one room, there's a lot of time for the characters to be in the background, you know,
noodling with something.
Yeah. Or as part of a conversation, taking it out and looking at the, like when Kurt Russell takes his spectacles out and puts them on to read the Lincoln letter in the carriage. It's really, really good. Like I'm going to do a watch where I just go through and look at that because it's unbelievable. The stuff
I agree.
I also wanted to call out a few shots he does. He uses it a lot in this film with a split diopter. And that's a lens attachment that goes between the lens and the camera that splits the focus. So you can have two things in the, in focus, both in the foreground and the background. He uses it in Reservoir Dogs. He does it in Inglourious Basterds, specifically when they walk down the stairs to the tavern where they all meet. Mm. And then you can see the shoe in focus. And he does it a lot in Hateful Eight with a gun on the right of the screen and the person in the back. And they both look in focus and it looks like a composite, but it's all done in camera.
Orson Welles and Hitchcock were both big fans of the split diopter.
Yes, and it's a striking effect. It looks even better in the film.
It's a gorgeous looking film. I found it impressively hard to take. I was surprised how difficult I found to take it, especially the very bleak ending.
Oh, it was.
I mean, the ending is by far Tarantino's bleakest of all his endings.
Well,
Django is way worse.
Really?
Oh,
Django lives, doesn't he?
Yeah. They write off.
It's as bleak as Reservoir Dogs. Okay, so I'm going to go back to saying that I think Quentin was really like going back to Reservoir. He's thinking, let me go back to my roots. Let me start and think about a bleak movie that takes place in a single room.
I thought this was like, I love Westerns. I didn't realize I love Westerns until I was 20 years old, probably. Yeah. And took a class that was about Westerns. I was like, wow, this is amazing. I went back and I was sick last week and was going through Criterion on Hulu and watched Stagecoach again, which if you haven't seen Stagecoach in a while, it's worth.
I've never seen it.
Oh, Stagecoach. So Stagecoach is a relatively, I guess it was probably John Wayne's first big film. Mm-hmm. And it is, I want to say it's a John Ford. I can't remember, but it is the movie that sets a lot of the tone that carries forward into the John Ford era of Westerns until you get up to the spaghetti Westerns of the 60s and 70s.
Yeah.
And like, this is very much in that, you know, John Ford, Man Who Shot Liberty Valance, Red River. It's very much a homage to those in the same way that, you know, Jackie Brown is to everything Elmore Leonard ever wrote. It is lovely to look at in that sense, because those opening vistas with the snow are something you never see in those movies, because they didn't have the technology. They weren't able to shoot in those places.
Absolutely.
For the most part, or they faked it on a soundstage.
Yeah.
And it's unbelievable to see it in real life.
I totally agree.
I thought this was much easier to watch than Django. Django made me much more uncomfortable.
Oh, wow. Django made me maybe as uncomfortable, but slightly less.
The constant racism is somehow worse in Django than it was here. I don't know.
Yeah, no, you're right. Yeah, absolutely right about that.
I think Kill Bill, Django, and Inglourious Basterds are all different movies, but they have an adventurous quality to them.
Mm-hmm.
And this one didn't.
Yeah.
And it's going back, like you said, to Reservoir Dogs.
So who are the eight? Who are the Hateful Eight? Because there were 10 people in the end.
The 10 people in the end.
I don't want to count.
Well, Bruce Dern isn't one of them.
Bruce Dern is not one of them.
He's not one of the Hateful Eight. And who's the other that's not? No, the Hateful Eight, there's nine, because it turns out, spoiler, big spoiler alert, that Channing Tatum's hiding in the basement.
I think the Stagecoach driver isn't one of them.
No, I don't think the Hateful Eight. You're right. The Stagecoach driver, which is BJ.
DB.
Old DB.
So bad for him.
Kurt Russell.
I know. And you recognize him, right? That's Michael Park's son.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I know that.
Michael Park was the sheriff.
And remember in Kill Bill, when he's there talking to his deputy, the deputy is his son.
Oh.
I think James Park. And when he says, son number one, you better shit can that blasphemy, we in the house of the Lord or something like that. He is saying that to that actor, his
hard
son.
To beat Kill Bill.
I know.
Okay, so yeah,
I think this is as good a place to stop.
Might as well be.
See, Hateful Eight. I'm gonna see it again. Let's bookmark this and talk about it in a couple months. I'd like to try and catch it one more time.
All right. Sounds good.
Next week we are going to talk about The Three Body Problem.
Yes.
So please get on it and get
on it. Read it.
Apparently, there's a good audiobook. I've been told.
I want to, maybe I'll listen to it again.
I'm probably going to listen. It's been a month or two since I read it. So
I'm going away for 7 days, so I got to bring some books with me.
All right.
There you go. See you guys next week.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Bye.
Isn't it beautiful?
It's really nice.
And I love, these are made to be whacked against each other.
Out.
We all knew it was coming.
It was coming.
I'm glad one sits in the middle.
Shall I turn this off?
Probably. All right.